Hello, it's Randy Rhodes. Here's a clip from our show, and go to randyrhodes.com for the whole thing and a podcast. Buy a Skinner podcast.
Mary had a little man.
The fault.
We believe that all men are created equal.
To the magnificent mosaic that is America.
From radio beacon to radio beacon.
I have a dream today.
Change has come to America.
Believe it.
Knock, knock. Who's there?
Hey. It's a figment of your imagination.
Randy Rhodes Show. Turn up your mind.
The world's largest legal market for recreational weed opened its doors on Monday. Dozens of newly licensed stores in California are open for business. The most populous state in the U.S. now permits the sale of cannabis products to customers 21 and older. It's the sixth U.S. state to legalize the drug for non-medical use. Customers are able to buy up to an ounce or 28 grams of raw cannabis or its equivalent at a time. Experts value California's marijuana market at several billion dollars a year. With its nearly 40 million residents, more than one in five Americans now live in a state where recreational marijuana is legal for purchase. The move toward legalization is part of a trend reversing tough U.S. drug laws enacted since the 1970s. Criminal justice reform advocates claim that marijuana prohibition has failed to make communities safer, and enforcement has been racially discriminatory. But pot remains an illegal narcotic at the federal level. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has called marijuana a dangerous drug.
I'm of the general view that this is not a healthy substance. I think that's pretty clear.
California joins Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, and Nevada in offering state-regulated and taxed marijuana. Massachusetts and Maine are set to follow suit later this year.
That's the good news. Happy New Year! Damn! Happy New Year, everybody. I wish I smoked pot. I never wished I smoked pot more than I do now, now that it's legal. But, good for you. It's the good news of this year so far. I guess the best news is that 2017 is over. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And, you got to be so careful here in Florida, like what you say and who you... I mean, you could say the most innocent thing. We went to the Billy Joel concert for the New Year's Eve. Billy, why are the tickets so damn expensive? Really? It was like, whoa. The arena that we have down here treats the cigarette smoker almost as nicely as the California, the Oregon, the Washington state treats the pot smoker. See, now I'm the pariah. You used to be the pariah. Now I'm the pariah. So this is why I wish I smoked the pot. I could just, walk around smoking my brains out all over Disney, apparently, and, concerts. But no, smoking is now the, the cigarette is the bad and the joint is good, even though the cigarette does not mess up your brain. And the marijuana does. But okay, so we're outside the arena down here, which, depends like which corporation is getting the biggest tax cut and then they buy the arena. So now it's named after a bank, the BB&T, the BB&T bank. So we're at the BB&T arena. And they actually have a smoking section that treats cigarette smokers like humans. It's amazing. There's actually, outdoor, all-weather wicker with a nice red cushiony, thing on it so that you could actually sit down and have a beer and smoke the cigarette, which goes really good with the beer. And so we're out there, me and the Howard, and we're all excited because for all the years I've been a rock jock, for some strange reason, I know why. I didn't get to see Billy Joel because Billy Joel, the time that he came through New York at the Jones Beach Amphitheater playing with Don Henley fired me that night. Yes, I was removed from the arena. Long story in the book. However, I never got to see Billy Joel because Don Henley fired me, see. And so I was very excited to see the Billy Joel. And Howard and I were outside and he was, placating me. So I'm go smoke your damn cigarette, enjoy the beer. And, it's New Year's, you could do. So we're outside and I'm smoking. And there were other couples, around us. And some of us were all commiserating, saying, oh, so glad 2017 is over. We're so glad it's over. And one super drunk woman, unkempt, I must say. I mean, just a mess. And I looked at her and I said, oh, you know, you remind me of my best friend, Joanne. And she goes, that's fucking, I can't even do it. She's like, that's, I won't say what she said. She said, that's freaking awesome. That's so freaking awesome. I'm like, oh, don't light the lighter. She'll explode this one. This is a lot of gasoline in that girl. And so she heard us saying how happy we were 2017 was over. And she goes, I freaking love 2017. She was like that. Wasn't she like that? Yeah. I'm not overacting here. I am not Jim Carrey, okay? She said, I loved 2017. I loved it. And this girl, you know, she's wearing like Kohl's Finest, you know, which is fine. But I'm actually dressed for New Year's Eve. I'm actually trying. And most of the people around me, you know, they pulled out the sparkly sweater. They pulled out the sequin top. Some people actually wore something other than a flip-flop. Not this girl. Okay. And so she's like, you know, so I said, well, God help me. Why did you like 2017? Well, the stock market did really well. I'm like, this is a girl who has never seen a Schwab account in her life. And now all we need is the effing wall. Okay, gotta go. Nice to talk to you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Oh, my God. And then I go into the ladies' room to get away from her. And I'm in the ladies' room, and I'm on the line. There's a line. Why do women have a line and men don't have a line? It's like, you know, what? And our bathrooms are always so freaking disgusting because there's so much paper in use in that bathroom. And I don't know who does this. I have never met the woman who will admit that she does this, but everybody knows that somebody's doing it. But she must be like using the paper and then just tossing it everywhere. Just woo, here you go. What is that? So yeah, it's like a minefield in there. And of course, you know, then you got the girl that doesn't wash her hands. She's the girl that was happy that 2017 happened, you know. But anyway, so I'm in there and I'm on the line and I'm waiting to use and I'm standing there like, you know, you got eagle eye waiting for the next stall. Come on, let's move it, honey, move it. And you know, you want to be, you know, behind the older women because quite frankly, we're faster. You figure out why. So we're faster, right? Because there are things that don't happen to us any longer. So, I mean, it was just like, I'm like, and all of a sudden I look and I'm like, what do I spy out of the corner of my left eye? What do I spy? And I see someone I recognize. And I don't know what to do. Because she's a serving member of Congress and she's a Republican and never, ever votes the right way, ever. But I also process in my political acumen brain, you know, my very big brain. I process the fact that she's leaving. I know she's retiring this year and I have suffered, you know, through her bad votes for like 30 years now. And I'm like, so I think, why attack her? She's going. So she's standing over in the corner, not wearing a stitch of makeup, which, by the way, she needs. It's like she threw all caution to the wind and just said, screw it, I'm out. And so I walk over politely, I extend my loving hand, and I say, Congresswoman, hello, I'm Randy Rhodes. Ow! Oh, my God! Everybody, do you know who this is? Now, this was the exact opposite of what should have happened. It should have been, you know, like if she were a Democratic congresswoman, maybe I would have, anybody except for a Florida congressman. Like if it was, you know, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I mean, it could have been worse, right? It could have been Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And then she's supposedly on my side, but she's not on my side. And so like then what would I have done? So I'm making the best and I'm going over and I'm saying, you know, why, you know, I heard you're leaving and why are you leaving? Oh my God, everybody in this line, stop for a minute. No, everyone's got to pee. They're doing the dance. Don't stop the line on account of me. Don't be doing that. I don't even have a camera. I need a camera. I don't even have one. I travel so light, which I'm thinking, well, that explains the lack of lipstick. Okay, so she's, you know, standing on the line, screaming literally on the top of her lungs. I'm like, does everyone get this drunk to see Billy Joel? You know, we're not 20 anymore. Really, how many stadium beers have you had? So she's just so excited. I mean, just like a beyond. And thank God she was coming out of the bathroom or else we would have caused a major catastrophe on her end, right? And so I say, she goes, I travel so light. I don't even have a phone. Oh my God, I need a picture. What am I going to do? I don't even have a phone. I said, well, I have a phone. And so I take out my phone, and all of a sudden I notice there's a girl at 12 o'clock, there's a girl at 9 o'clock, and there's a girl at 3 o'clock, okay? And they go, no, 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 don't take out your phone. I think they thought I was going to tape her or something because she was wild. She was wild. And I go, oh. So the Congresswoman travels light, does she? So your staff. Yes, let's just take the picture and get her out of here. So I hand her my phone. I go, just take the picture. She takes the picture. So now I'm stuck, you know, like I finally get to go. I go back out to the smoking section and I'm sitting there looking at it. What do I tweet? What do I do? What do I do? She says, so I follow you on Twitter. So now I know she's going to read it. Or at least her staff is, like right away. So I figure, why attack her? She's leaving. So I said, oh, the last decent Republican woman, blah, blah, blah. And so she writes me back on Twitter. And anyway, that was that was the end of 2017. And, you know, the more I think about running into a retiring Ileana Ross Leighton, who only uses the 1S, okay, the more I think about that she was like the last congressperson that I saw in 2017, outgoing, leaving Congress. I don't know who's going to replace her. I mean, it just freaks me out. Now I'm thinking maybe I should move down to her district in Miami, although you don't even have to live there, and run for her seat. I don't know. But yeah, it was Ileana Ross Leighton, and you know, the Republican from Miami. And I don't know why she had such a response to me. I must bring back memories for her like Billy Joel does. So, you know. Go with God, Ileana. Go with God. She's got a pension for the rest of her life. Voted for the tax cuts. Voted to repeal Obamacare. I mean, crazy, crazy, crazy. But it was like, for me, it was a distinctive period in the ladies' room that I haven't had for a really long time at the end of 2017. Bye-bye, 2017. The bad news is that almost all of the things that made 2017 suck are still around and in office, with the exception of Ileana Ross Leighton, who will be retiring at the end of this year. And the things that made 2017 suck are still tweeting, like 16 times yesterday, to the point where the newspapers literally fact check his tweeting. And I mean, none of the things that he tweets are true. It's like he is the embodiment of a liar. You know how they have like Pinocchios in the in the PolitiFact, and they have pants off. I mean, you shouldn't give Donald Trump Pinocchios. Pinocchio ought to give Donald Trump's. Do you know what I mean? Because he is like the embodiment of a liar. He just can't. He cannot stop. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I mean, she does more talking than he does and says absolutely nothing. And he tweets that he's got a big button. A big button. Doesn't he know men shouldn't have buttons? Women have buttons. Speaking of the ladies, women have the button. The men don't have the button. And this explains why he's always grabbing at it and doesn't know anything about, the anatomy. It's so. And he's tweeting things like, there have been no fatal passenger airline crashes in the United States because, he tweeted, since taking office, I have been very strict on commercial aviation. What is he talking about? He writes, good news, it was just reported that there were zero deaths in 2017, the best and safest year on record. You do realize the last airline crash we had was in 2009, and Obama was, he missed the whole opportunity to take credit for all the airline safety, but, you know, Trump is on top of it. I love 2017. Now all we need is the freaking wall. These are his supporters. This is his base. There have been no fatal passenger airline crashes in the United States since 2009. And the one before that was in 2001. What is he talking about? That was 9/11. Oh. I didn't have any kitchen mishaps last year or any mishaps in the bathroom other than running into Republican Congresswoman Ileana Ross Leighton. I think we should all thank President Trump. Crazy.
Clear for takeoff.
Randy Rhoads Air Force.
Air Force.
RandyRhoads.com.
smoke them if you got them. Yes, it's Herky Jerky in 2018. And for 2018, they're starting off with $5 off full packs of delicious beef smokies. Since Herky Jerky started in 1992, Herky Jerky's delicious beef smokies have been one of the most popular items, and for very good reason. The 100% beef meat sticks have just the right amount of snap on the outside and flavor on the inside. They're low cholesterol, high protein, guaranteed fresh, and the perfect snack for any occasion. This month, they're ringing in the new year with a discount of $5 off all full packs of their three kinds of smokies, mild, honey, and jalapeno. The full packs are 1.5 pounds. They include 30 long sticks. The discount applies to full packs only, but as always, if you buy any two packs of their products, you'll get free shipping. We hope everybody had a fun and safe holiday season, and we look forward to you enjoying Herky Jerky in 2018 with the absolute best and most delicious jerky anywhere in the world. Visit herkyjerky.com now.
Hello, Progressive Voices TuneIn listeners. I'm Casey Hobbs.
And I'm Shane Mason, and we're the hosts of Nurse Talk Radio.
Here's what we're talking about this week.
So often the healthcare debate sheds very little light on the role insurance companies play both in skyrocketing premiums and the interference in patient care.
Insurance companies increasingly use a number of tactics that limit or deny coverage for certain prescription procedures. And despite what insurers may claim, these tactics are intended to maximize their own profits. And
right.
Often, unfortunately, it's at the expense of patients' health and well-being. Consider that every dollar they don't spend on your health care or your prescription that your doctor writes or a test or diagnostic that your doctor needs is a dollar that goes right to their bottom line or right to their executive compensation and right to their quarterly earnings report. I think there's no denying cost of care continues to escalate, right? Prices of virtually every part of the healthcare system continues to go up. So when you're the insurer and it's your job to pay those costs, even delaying by 30, 60, 90 days moves that cost into your next quarter, takes it off your books for this quarter, and a delay tactic that results in a better quarterly profit earning statement, for example, by the insurers. And sometimes they do all this by quote-unquote accident. And I saw an example of an insurance company basically admitting to an error in the paperwork that resulted in what amounted to a 2-month delay for treatment that this patient badly needed. It's truly insidious.
Right.
Whatever your political views might be, we have to take care of each other, and our country can do better. Only us citizens can do something meaningful, and that's why it's so important to demand the change and demand the coverage and demand the access to care that we deserve.
Check out our show at nursetalksite.com and listen every Saturday and Sunday right here on Progressive Voices.
All things Randy at randyrhodes.com.
Go for launch.
Speaking truth to power, the Randy Rhodes Show.
Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee it.
Oh, my God. And he's still doing it. You know, everything with him is size matters on the Twitters now. Size matter. He actually is tweeting at Kim Jong-un, "I, too, have a nuclear button, but it's much bigger and more powerful than his, and my button works." Could somebody please explain to Donald Trump that a button is not the best phallic symbol? Neither are his tiny little hands. And they are tiny. They're very tiny. Somebody has a diagram, you know, like an outline of Trump's hands that they spread around the internets. We printed it out and I put my hand on top of Trump's hand and I have the same size here. See this? This is an actual size Trump hand, right? And if you put my hand on top of his hand, it's the exact same size hand. Now, Brett's hand is gigantic, and it makes Donald Trump's hand look like a button. It's, you know, tiny. Howard's hands are ginormous, everybody. Just, you know, I went for the big hand. I went for the huge. I mean, this was my third try at romance, and I went for, you know, the huge, gigantic. You hear that, ladies? Donald Trump is packing a button. And I guess what they say about large, gigantic Howard hands is very true. I guess that's what they... Guys are not supposed to have buttons. Women have buttons. He sent out 16 tweets yesterday, and that's crazy before you even start looking at the contents of the tweets talking about his big button. What is wrong with him? The only reason to be tweeting that many times a day is if your album just dropped. He's live tweeting his entire day. This is crazy. This is just, you know, anybody else who was sending 16 pointless tweets in a day would have their phone taken away from them, unless their album dropped that day. You know why? Because anybody who tweeted 16 times a day like this, live tweeting his entire day and threatening nuclear holocaust with North Korea, would be like a 12-year-old, and you would have to take their phone away. This is the president of the United States of America. And I tell you something, you know, the media is starting to get a little nervous about him. I got to tell you, what do you mean you're just starting? He started last year with Fire and Fury. Oh, and Fire and Fury. There is a new book by Michael Wolff. I don't know if you heard about this. It's called Fire and Fury. And it Michael Wolff should be live tweeting, because this book drops in like a week. And so excerpts were printed. And the New Yorker has 22 pages of this book, which I spent reading just before I got on the air. And it's unfreaking believable. He had 200 interviews with the inner circle at the Trump White House to be, and at the transition, and then in the Trump White House. And oh my God, the crap that people told him. I mean, the things that were said about him from his own friends, from, Roger Ailes calls him an idiot. He said, you know, he's got the attention span of a flea. You know what I mean? And Bannon, does anybody believe that Steve Bannon was not involved in the Trump campaign? Of course, he hardly knew Michael Flynn. He hardly knew Scaramucci. He hardly knows Ivanka. He hardly knows Donald Jr. He hardly knows Jared, right? He hardly knows anybody that he hired to work for him. He doesn't know George Papadopoulos. He was the guy that was hired to get coffee. You see what I mean? And so now he's distancing himself from Bannon because Bannon was quoted in this book calling the meeting that Donald Trump Jr. had with Natalia Veselnitskaya and Renik Akhmetshin and all these Russians with Jared and, Manafort and all that. Of course, he hardly knows Manafort, just seemed like a nice guy. Michael Flynn seemed like a nice guy. Fired Comey to stop investigating Michael Flynn, but he wouldn't, fall on it. He wouldn't take, a hit from Michael Flynn because he hardly knows. So now he hardly knows Bannon, because Bannon said that meeting that Donald Trump Jr. had at Trump Tower was treason. Now, I want you to know a little something about this author. Michael Wolff had 200 conversations over 18 months. He's a journalist for Vanity Fair and The Guardian and The Hollywood Reporter. I mean, I think he did the book on Murdoch. I think that's another one of his biographies. He did Murdoch. But he said that this book, he was given unbelievable access to the Trump inner circle, and that he said some conversations were off the record, some were on deep background, but most of the conversations were on the record, and he just writes what he was told. And one of the excerpts is just unfreaking believable that Trump, well, let me just tell you this. Trump really didn't think he was going to win. In fact, Trump was counting on losing. He said he only ran for president because he was looking for fame. Okay, the Celebrity Apprentice was on its way out, and he wanted a whole news network of his own. And that all those rumors about, the Trump network were true. And that the reason why he got into the presidential race was because, let me see if it was Rupert Murdoch. I think it was Rupert Murdoch that told him that the first thing that you do, or Roger Ailes told him that the first thing that you do is you run for president if you want to get famous, and then you launch your network. And so this is why he did it. And he never counted on winning. And that the night that that Donald Trump Jr. said that at 8 o'clock on election eve, when it started to become obvious to him that he could win and might win, that Melania started crying, and it wasn't tears of joy. She didn't want to go through it because, remember, the New York Post released her modeling pictures and she was stark raving nude. And she had said to Donald, is this what it's going to be like? I don't want to do this. And so she was crying because she didn't want to be first lady. And that Trump Sr. was first, they said he looked like a ghost, like he had seen a ghost. And then he was horrified because he had no idea, you know, what to do or how to be, you know, he just didn't want any of the responsibility. He only did it for fun and for fame. And that he just kept walking around saying how crappy his campaign was and how everybody involved with it was a loser. And he was equally convinced that the Clinton campaign were brilliant and that she was surrounded by the absolute best people. All the best people went to work for her. This is the quote. They've got the best and we've got the worst. He frequently said that time spent with Trump on the campaign plane was an epic dissing experience. He called everyone around him an idiot. This is unbelievable. And here's a key excerpt from the book. The chance that Don Jr. This is Steve Bannon talking to Michael Wolff, the author of Fire and Fury. He says the chance that Don Jr. did not walk these Jumos up to his father's office on the 26th floor is zero. Talking about the Russians. He said the three senior guys in the campaign, they thought it was a good idea to meet with a foreign government inside Trump Tower in the conference room on the 25th floor with no lawyers. They didn't have any lawyers. Even if you thought this was not treasonous or unpatriotic or bad shit, and I happen to think it was all of that, you should have called the FBI immediately. This is unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's treasonous. It's bad. They should have called the FBI immediately. Oh, and the stuff in this book is unbelievable. And so it looks like, you know, he was talking to Roger Ailes and trying to undo Rupert Murdoch because Ailes, after Ailes was fired for sexual harassment, Ailes became, a hero to Donald Trump. Donald Trump had asked Roger Ailes to take over the campaign, and Roger Ailes declined to do so and told him, look, all you got to do is run. And, you know, then we'll set up the Trump, network to get even with Rupert. This was all to get even with Rupert Murdoch. And Ailes was pissed at Rupert because Rupert Murdoch fired him for sexual harassment when he was, 30 years, at Fox News. And he had, he had a vendetta to get Rupert. And so Trump partnered with Ailes to set up the Trump Media Network. And they even said, who was in, and Hannity was in. And Glenn Beck was in. They were saying, and Kellyanne Conway, she wanted a job there too. She thought she would be a cable news hostess. That's why she was doing it. I mean, it's unbelievable what this whole campaign was really about. It was about, Trump starting the Trump media. And that's why Bannon. Because it was all about media. But when it became obvious that night that he might become the president of the United States, Ailes told Trump, right after the election, you need a son of a bitch as your chief of staff, and you need a son of a bitch who knows Washington. You'll want to be your own son of a bitch, but you don't know Washington. So I want to suggest, this is what Roger Ailes is saying to Donald Trump. He goes, I have a suggestion. Get Speaker Boehner. Get Boehner. John Boehner. He was forced out in 2011 by these Tea Party freaks, right? And so he said, go get Boehner. He's a real son of a bitch. He'll be your son of a bitch. He doesn't, he knows Washington. You don't. And Trump's answer to Roger Ailes when he suggests Boehner be his son of a bitch, chief of staff, Trump said, who's that? How do you not know who Boehner is? You know who Boehner is. I know. Which now means that you and the drunk girl at the Billy Joel concert knows more than the president of the United States. This is freaking frightening stuff. Okay, here's another excerpt from this. Okay, Reince Priebus, the weekend of the Access Hollywood tape. Okay, this is still during the election now. He's not president yet. He was called to New York. He was in Washington, and he was called to New York for an emergency meeting at Trump Tower. But he couldn't make himself leave Penn Station and go to Trump Tower because he wanted out. He did not want to be part of this anymore. So it took him 2 hours for the Trump campaign to get him to leave Penn Station, which is on 34th Street, just for people who don't get the geography. It's like 20 blocks away from Trump Tower, okay? 20 blocks away. I mean, you could walk it, or it's 5 minutes in a cab. It took him 2 hours to get him to get in a taxi. And desperately, Steve Bannon is talking to him on the phone, and he goes, bro, I may never see you again after today, but you got to come to this building and you got to walk through the front door. Bannon was begging him to come. That's not what Steve Bannon told the press, okay? This is what he told.
And Trump went around the room and asked people the percentages he thought of still winning and what the recommendation. And Ryan started off and Ryan said, you have two choices. You either drop out right now or you lose by the biggest landslide in American political history. And Trump, with his humor, goes, that's a great way to start our conversation. We went around the room, and I could tell from the incoming of politicians, and I could tell from some of the politicians that were there, is that the natural inclination of politicians are to be so overwhelmingly stunned and shocked by how the media comes on you. But Trump wasn't that. And I told him as he went around, I was the last guy to speak, and I said, it's 100%. You have 100% probability of winning. And that's the first time.
But you seem to have done that at every point in the campaign. When he was in trouble, asking him to double down on his rhetoric, double down in terms of appealing to his base.
Appealing to the American people and to the working class people in this country. Absolutely. You know what?
Okay, so check this out. So now Bannon is talking to Michael Wolff, the biographer, and he's saying that what went on in this campaign was tantamount to treason and that the FBI should have been called. And also there's another quote in here that didn't get much coverage, but it's unbelievable, where he says, he's talking to Roger Ailes, Bannon is, and he tells Roger Ailes that Trump kept going to Putin. He kept on asking Putin for help. And Bannon says Putin didn't give a shit. This is Bannon talking. Says he didn't give a shit about Donald Trump, but Donald Trump kept trying. He kept trying. And so now Bannon is saying that what happened in this campaign was treasonous, that he should have gone to the FBI. Bannon obviously was the author of this racist, white supremacist, white nationalist. They call it populist, but I call it Nazi, okay? This is like real uber nationalism, like real racist. White people are going to disappear from the American experiment and they're going to be replaced with brown people. Sell that, you know, tell that to your base. Do that, you know. All of a sudden, Trump doesn't know Steve Bannon. He puts out a statement today after these excerpts up from this book come out. This is what his full statement says. Now, I just want you to know, okay, I'll play this for you again after I get done, how Bannon is involved in the campaign and repeatedly is telling Donald Trump to just be Trump and to go ahead and appeal to the most base instincts of, white America, to keep on going and to keep on, you know, upping the ante make the rhetoric really crazy and, you know.
Listen, you motherfuckers, we're going to.
Like that, and you know.
I'm going to bomb the shit out of them.
Like that, you know, all this stuff, and the Muslim ban, and Mexican, blah, blah. Here's what Donald Trump put out in a statement today. This is unfreaking believable. This is why I say he shouldn't get Pinocchio's. Pinocchio should get Trump's. He wrote, Steve Bannon has nothing to do with me or my presidency. When he was fired, he not only lost his job, he lost his mind. Steve was a staffer who worked for me after I already won the nomination by defeating 17 candidates, often described as the most talented field ever assembled in the Republican Party. Now that he's on his own, Steve is learning that winning isn't as easy as I make it look. Steve had very little to do with our historic victory, which was delivered by the forgotten men and women of the country. He's quoting Steve Bannon. Yet Steve had everything to do with the loss of a Senate seat in Alabama, held for more than 30 years by Republicans. Steve doesn't represent my base. He's only in it for himself. Oh, I see. So Steve Bannon wasn't responsible for you, Donald Trump, endorsing a pedophile? Really? Because you did do that. Goes on. Steve pretends to be at war with the media, which he calls the opposition party, yet he spent his time at the White House leaking false information to the media to make himself seem far more important than he was. It was the only thing he does well. Steve was rarely in a one-on-one meeting with me. Would you like me to go through my photographs and videos where it's you and Steve Bannon and Michael Flynn sitting in the Oval Office over and over and over again? None of these people are still there because one pled guilty to lying to the FBI and the other one was fired after endorsing a pedophile? Or before? Steve was rarely in one-on-one meetings with me and only pretends to have had influence to fool a few people with no access and no clue. He helped write phony books? Well, that's true. Look, there's a truth in there. We have many great Republican members of Congress and candidates who are very supportive of the Make America Great Again agenda. What does that include? Starting global nuclear war? Like me, they love the United States of America and are helping to finally take our country back and build it up rather than simply seeking to burn it all down. Really?
Asking him to double down on his rhetoric, double down in terms of appealing to his base.
Appealing to the American people and to the working class people in this country, absolutely. You know why? Because it was a winner. That's why I told him double down every time. And on that day, that's the first time and only time he ever got upset with me. He goes, come on, it's not 100%. I go, it's absolutely 100%. And I told him why. They don't care.
And they do care about respect for women.
They do.
And it's not just locker room talk.
Locker room talk. The Billy Bush thing is locker room talk.
Did you lose confidence of anybody because they came at you at that point and said, look, he ought to get out of this race other than Reince Priebus? I mean, did your attitude towards those people who said that, you're just wrong?
Absolutely. Billy Bush Saturday, to me, is a litmus test. It's a litmus test. And I said it the other day to General Kelly during the Charlottesville thing afterwards. It's a line I remember from the movie The Wild Bunch. William Holden uses it right before that huge gunfight at the end. When you side with a man, you side with him, okay? The good and the bad. You can criticize him behind, but when you side with him, you have to side with him. And that's what Billy Bush Weekend showed me.
Holy crap. So he hardly knows him. After Charlottesville, he says, you know, double down and, you know, say there was some good Nazis out there and do the white supremacist thing. But they hardly know each other. Isn't that something? And then he endorses Roy Moore because Steve Bannon picked Roy Moore. And they lose, after 30 years, a solidly Republican Senate seat, which was, you know. Oh, and by the way, Doug Jones gets sworn in today. He got sworn in today. Isn't that beautiful? No, I mean, it's unbelievable. But he hardly knows him. Trump's going to hardly know Ivanka. He's going to hardly know Jared. By the end of this, Trump isn't even going to know himself. Never met the man. He has very small hands. I would never hang out with a man with hands so small. I would never do that. This book is going to be a bestseller. There is no question about it. No question about it. Congratulations to Michael Wolff. It is on my must-read list. Go to randyrhodes.com for the whole thing and a podcast. Buy a stinking podcast.